Welcome to You Hate Movies, the podcast in which casual moviegoers, film lovers, and cinephiles argue about movies. There's a Marvel movie fronted by a female superhero, and people are either pretty excited or pretty upset. Behold, four more dudes and one more girl arguing about Captain Marvel. Along the way, you'll get spoilers for The Secret World of Alex Mack, Watchmen, Guardians of the Galaxy, Black Panther, Wonder Woman, and Avengers Infinity War. It's a weird world we're living in these days, when one of the biggest corporate conglomerates in the history of mankind.
Corporate conglomerates?
Yeah, I don't know. Those are two words that go together to describe true. A massive institution of a business institution of some kind.
It is a conglomerate, right?
It's at this point, it's fully conglomerated.
You're talking about the Marvel Cinematic?
No.
Studios?
No. I'm talking about Disney.
Oh, Disney. Yeah, that's a conglomerate.
Yeah. So a massive corporation cranks out a franchise sequel at this point, well into the latter half of the double digits.
Wait, what?
How many movies are there now?
Say that sentence again. This is 21 or something, 22?
Well into the I was going to say the latter teens is what I meant to say, but we're fully out of them.
Yeah, we're past that.
We're now into the 20s.
Early 20s. Infinity War was 19 or 20?
I thought it was 19.
Isn't Ant-Man and Wasp number 20?
Yeah, because I was like, why should it have been? That should have been Panther? Switched or something. It would have been more interesting to see if Infinity War was 20, since it was such
a satisfying
big,
for
sure. More satisfying. Yeah. But it wasn't.
Instead, it's like a terrible movie made it to number 20.
Stop right. it. We'll give us a second. So a massive company, one of the biggest in the world, cranks out a franchise sequel to a beloved franchise. So there's always going to be some amount of bickering and dissection going on for, you know, a huge pop culture moment,
of course.
But sometimes those same pop culture moments become adopted as a ostensible social justice cause, and you'd think that it was like, you know, suffrage or something like that. But it's not. It's just number 21 in Disney's...
Are you fact-checking that, Tyler?
...chain of franchise sequels. But nonetheless, the world being what it is, everyone arguing before the movie comes out, companies like Rotten Tomatoes having to change the way their website works and crap. Everyone upset.
Wait, what?
Some people defensive.
About changing the website?
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Prior to the release of Captain Marvel, the world being what it is, people are fighting about this movie that no one's seen. And a bunch of the world, we call them trolls on the internet. A bunch of online trolls. Because they like live under a bridge and crap. Is that why that name is what it is? They're just like subhuman.
You want me to look up the origin of troll?
Like a mud shark, like just a subhuman bottom. I don't know.
I always thought, you know, the story of the Billy Goat Gruff, right? When they're going over the bridge.
Oh, because they're just trying to trick people?
Yeah, he's like teasing them and like egging them on. For
yeah, originally that's the way I heard it used, but now I think it's just the shorthand for anyone who's antagonistic on the internet.
I think so too, yeah.
So anyway, these online trolls go on Rotten Tomatoes to try to, in a deliberate, semi-organized effort to bring the user's rating of Captain Marvel down prior to its release. Because you can go on there and be like, one star, this sucks. It's not even out yet. So Rotten Tomatoes has to be like, listen, from now on, no one can leave reviews before the movie's out. And I'm thinking, Rotten Tomatoes, why'd you let people rate the movies?
Yeah, why was that ever the case?
That already didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But then they're having to release headlines, hey, you know, we don't want these trolls affecting the score. And presumably they're just going to, I don't know, where the 4chan or something to be like, that's all right, we'll organize, we'll come back.
Well, you have even professional critics that are essentially trolling, like the dude that gave Lady Bird a thumbs down just because he didn't want it to have a perfect rating.
He did, but that made a little more sense to me. Because it was he said that it was complicated. He said you write a review that can be, you know, if you're a movie critic, a professional, you know, movie critic journalist, you write a review that kind of says, well, it's good and bad. It depends on how you look at it. That was essentially his
review. Yeah, the long form allows for nuance, but you're talking about the short.
But when you hand that review to Rotten Tomatoes, you have to assign it fresh or rotten. So like when
with
it all comes
with
down
a sentence to
it,
to describe it.
Yeah, and then you pick a pull line, a
right.
pull quote.
So sometimes the pull quote is negative, but then the little red tomato will be there sitting there fresh.
Yeah, or vice versa.
Right.
You're like, this really sounds like you liked it, and yet it's a rotten.
Wait, so that's the only, it's binary? It's either good or bad, and they come up with their average?
Yeah, because Rotten Tomatoes is not a grade. It just averages the amount of critics that gave it a positive versus a negative score.
Why would they do that?
It's a 100, like, 100% scale.
It's
but
a
it's
consensus
not,
rating.
Well, you're using essentially, well, it's called binomial data. You're binary, positive or negative, and you need way more sample, like a much larger sample size in order to create like confidence in like the outcome. If you just gave everybody a 1 through 100, you would need less of a sample size in order to get the same confidence interval in this like score, for instance. Why would they specifically
They're not
it?
After confidence intervals. All they're trying to tell you is that, like, hey, if you're interested what the reviews on this movie were, 89% of critics thought it was good.
Right.
The other percentage didn't.
And
but it would
if
tell
enough
you
critics,
more.
If enough critics participate, then it's certified in its number.
But you could use the same number
correct.
Of people, and if they gave a rating from 0 to 100, your percentage would be more representative
correct.
Or more correct. Yeah. You need, I mean, that's just probability and statistics. You need more data when
you're
just
actually
got
speaking to
negative.
The most common misconception about Rotten Tomatoes is that I would say the vast majority of the average movie-going public still thinks that Rotten Tomatoes assigns a grade to movies. They'll say like it got 90% and they think that means like an A.
It was 90% good.
It was 90% good. And you're like, that's not what it means.
Like 90% of the film itself was good?
No.
It's like it got a grade.
Got a grade out of 90 out of 100.
Well, yeah, that's what Peter's describing.
That's the perception that they get.
That's what I'm saying. That's that's the
perception.
Baseline perception of Rotten Tomatoes, but that's not
that's wrong.
The way it works.
Right.
And the reason that that's confusing is that people throw around fresh or rotten as though that's like a you know, that speaks to the status of the movie in general. But you can get movies that, especially, you know, your indie flicks and art house flicks that are wildly divisive, and they might be technically rotten, but the 40% of critics that gave it a good review are the ones that, you know, you see an ad for a movie that's like remarkable, life-changing, a feat of extraordinary filmmaking, and then you're like, oh, it's rotten, that's weird. And it's because, oh, well, it was divisive, that, you know, like more critics disliked it than liked it, but the ones who liked it thought
it
was like extravagant. Yeah, you know.
Those are the critics we care about.
So, like, take Darren Aronofsky's movie Mother, for example, which got a really low Rotten Tomatoes score, and you can totally see why. It's certainly not a movie for everyone. But if someone explained to you, you'll either love it or hate it, and that's really that kind of thing. It's not like, you know that movie that they're advertising right now where Keira Knightley is like having an affair with one of the Skarsgårds in post-World War II world, and you're just like, God, this thing looks bad when you see the trailer.
I think it looks good.
I saw today that it's like sitting at a 10% or something on Rotten Tomatoes. And you're like, to me, maybe I'm being presumptuous, but it seems like it's probably just because it's bad. It's probably because 90% of critics were like, this is bad.
If it's that low.
Yeah.
Based on that method, a 50% rating is essentially saying what you were saying earlier, where, you know, it was divisive or whatever.
Yeah, but that would mean it would be rotten in the technical sense.
Right, which is... Do you know how IMDb does it? I'm pretty sure that they actually take an average.
IMDb is based on scores.
Yeah, it's a Metascore that they do.
And it's is it user or critic?
I think it's numbers. You can give it up to...
Right, so it's not
binary. But they're asking people to scale it themselves. They're asking how good people thought it was.
Right.
Rotten Tomatoes is not asking how good. They just want to know, is it good or bad?
Right. And then the nuance is in the pull quote that may or may not lead you
and
to
it's
the
And it's all relative. Like the Aquaman reviews were... it's
bad.
Thumbs down because it's a dumb popcorn movie. And then the next guy would say, thumbs up, it's a dumb popcorn movie. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. Because if you know what you're getting, they're like, eh, I mean, that's just the nature of film journalism in general.
So, yeah. It seems like that system has less resolution. Like, you get more out of it. Again, back to my original. You get more out of it if you made it like some...
Well, that's relative, isn't it? The person who found it, Mr. Tomatoes, he just was thinking, or Miss Tomatoes, right? Miss Tomatoes was just thinking, hey, people seem to be interested in the kind of collective critical consensus on movies. Wouldn't it be interesting if there was a way to put them all together and not just that, but to average out the thumbs up or thumbs down, because the average, and I actually enjoy reading movie reviews, and I do often kind of skim down to the bottom and be like, oh, 3 out of 5, or, you know, like, you're looking for the bottom line.
Right.
And then other times you're actually more interested in reading like essay journalism on a movie. But the complicated thing about even an IMDb score or a Rotten Tomatoes user score is that, forgive me, listeners, but the stupidity of the individual is just staggering.
The audience.
We are collectively a dumb people. And I think I said something about this on...
Particularly when it comes to criticizing art.
Yeah, when it comes to art criticism, the whole purpose of our show is that you'll go and look on a Rotten Tomatoes, the user things, which I almost never do. But sometimes if you... Go ahead right now, listener. When you're done with this episode, open up your phone. Open up the, you know, whatever's playing right now in the Flickster app where you have Rotten Tomatoes and the user score. And the reviews will be like, hated it. Hair so stupid. One star. And the next one will be like, hair. This so good. He hot. Yeah. Like 5 stars. They're like, I walked out during the middle. I was hungry. 1 star. And you're like, these are not reviews. Like, you are not qualified to come. There's a reason that these people used to have to like actually study journalism and like film criticism and art criticism. Stuff, right. Anyway, so these same Yahoos that are saying, I'm bringing it back around. These same Yahoos that are saying, I don't like woman in movie, me hate. They're the ones trying to bring down the score. It's making headlines. Yeah. There's an aggressive campaign to kind of present Captain Marvel as a beacon of like feminist ideology. Before the movie's come out, we've all seen it. And all. So it's like already, you're either on this side or on this side, blah, blah, blah. And in the middle of it, people are going, well, you know, we're about to see it. It's a Marvel movie and we got to go see those. So like, is it going to make money or not going to make money? I'll go ahead and tell you the answer to that right now. It's going to make money. Because it's a Marvel movie. And we all saw it. So Tyler's on the show.
Yeah, I saw it.
You saw Captain Marvel?
Yeah, saw it.
Abigail is on the show.
Saw it.
I want to point out that Tyler, or maybe it was Patrick, somebody said, we're going to look bad doing the show without more girls. And Abby was the only one who came to the show.
I said, can we get any women? And Patrick said, I'll try.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, the other females that are on the show with us haven't seen the movie.
Oh.
Okay.
So that makes it problematic.
It's a dilemma.
We care more about the cause, I guess. Yeah. But Abby saw it.
I saw it.
She cares enough. And then this is a funny story. Peter is back on the show.
Hey-o.
For the first time in a while. I was with him earlier this evening.
Hey, Tyler.
And he goes, hey, I saw Captain Marvel. And he had an aggressive opinion about it for the positive. And I said, you should just come over and record this podcast because you obviously have some thoughts. And Patrick, you were one of the first to see Captain Marvel.
Yep, I saw it.
Opening weekend.
I went and saw it opening weekend and had to leave 20 minutes into it because my eye was infected.
You were hungry?
Yeah. My eye hurt. Me leave. 1 star.
Yeah, and then I went back and saw
Patrick it. Patrick suffered an eye injury. So, yeah, he was out for, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks almost?
Yeah, it was bad.
Wait, this is for real?
Yeah.
You suffered this injury in the movie theater?
No. I suffered, my kid scratched my eye on a Thursday, and I went to go see the movie on a Friday, and I couldn't sit through.
Which is so poetic, I told him later about how it plays out for Nick Fury in the film.
Yeah, and I have thoughts on that when we get to that part of the movie. But
he was so sexist that he's like, I can't handle all this.
My eyes can't even take what this is.
I can't look at this.
All right, so let's go around and hear some beginning where we left off with Patrick. What was your Rotten Tomatoes pool quote and Fresh Rotten rating? Let's get a percentage going on You Hate Movies for Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
On
Captain Marvel.
A 5 moon scale.
I would say 3 moons. It's a Marvel movie, not the best, not the worst. Fresh.
Okay.
All right. Not my eye hurt.
I went back and saw it again. Based on my second viewing, that's my opinion. If you ask me my first viewing, it was my eye hurt. 1 star. Bad experience.
Peter.
I think it's pretty hard to assess one movie in the context of like every movie you've ever seen. You know?
That's not asking you to do that.
I know, but it's just like I want to give it a high score, but it's like the reality is there are so many good movies.
Give it, rate it in the context of itself.
Or rate you're it saying in the context of how I felt.
You're saying that it's hard for you to rate this film because you have a 5-star scale. You have a 5-star film in mind and a 1-star film in mind.
Sure.
And you're trying to compare it to those where it falls on this scale.
Yes. And I am concerned that if I use that scale, I'll just give it some mediocre review that doesn't really articulate how I feel. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. I'd have to,
you're
with that much data, I'd have to give it like a 3 at most.
Give it a,
you're bringing
Marvel
in
score.
Too much data. Let it let it contextualize itself.
You're a man with a lot of depth, I can see, you know. You like to give us the facts and the figures, but I can see that there's some emotion in there, you know. There's yeah. a there's a well
look
of emotion.
At it. Yeah, look yeah, at it this way. It's fair to say, you know, all The Godfather is a 5-star film and so is Evil Dead 2. Based on their respective contexts,
right.
You know, they're nothing similar, and comparatively, one is a better feat of filmmaking.
Evil
but they're
Dead
both five. Yeah. Evil Dead 2
has
is clearly
rated within context. That's
if,
good.
If I rate it within the feelings I felt and my general enjoyment, I'd give it a 4 out of 5 stars.
Okay,
so you really liked it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's totally. How our conversation started. He said, "I really liked it.
I had a really good experience." Like, if you ask me 2 years from now, like what the premise was and what I liked so much about it, I would oh have boy. No idea, you know. Nothing. It's not like it's left some, you know, profound ideas in my mind. But
was
I had
it
a
the
good
'90s
time.
Nostalgia?
Oh, that was you? A huge part of it. Yeah. I'm a big '90s fan.
Peter just had a '90s themed birthday party.
Yes, I did.
And then he was high on that, walking into Captain Marvel. Give me some more.
I had no idea too. So it was like it was very. I don't know. I was excited about that. That was great. It had all these songs that I didn't even play at my party.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But it was good. Yeah, really had some songs. It had some songs.
We played some No Doubt at your party.
Did I?
And
probably,
Nirvana.
Yeah.
Nirvana.
Yeah, I did. That's right.
Abby also liked Captain Marvel, right?
I did.
Telling me steal your thunder. I'm mansplaining.
You're telling her what she saw?
Yeah. Here's what you thought. Tyler?
Let's see. I would probably give it 4 out of 5, 2.
Nice.
High 2.
Yeah.
Yep. I liked it a lot. I would rate it fresh.
Noted.
That's it. All right.
Okay, well, for the following reasons, none. Tyler?
I actually saw it twice in theaters.
Why'd you do that?
Wow.
Well, I had I went and saw it.
He's already doing that.
Sarah. I went and saw it with Sarah, and then I found myself on another day with some time to kill, and so I went to the theater, and that's what was playing.
You still cheating MoviePass to see this?
No.
So you paid actually. To see it twice?
Yeah, wow. But they were both matinees.
Okay, you don't need to justify it to me, pal.
Yeah, okay.
This is a weird one to see twice.
I am a little surprised.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Well, I
was
I
the other selection just terrible?
Well, the theater I went to for the second viewing, that's the only movie they were playing.
Ah, I see.
It was the Baghdad. Got some pizza and
nice
and beer. Watched it again.
Did you just go
really manly
pizza,
time
beer,
watching Captain Marvel?
I just went
here.
For the pizza and beer and I said, oh, there's a movie too. well, the first time I saw it, I thought it was a little convoluted. So the second viewing, it appreciated. But that's I think that my pull quote for Captain Marvel is that while it's surface, at the surface, it's a mediocre Marvel film. But underneath, with its clear social justice intent, it's much stronger than other Marvel films. Mm-hmm. Much like Black Panther was trying to have a social commentary while also being a superhero movie, I think this did a better job of that. So I give it 3 stars.
And all that to say, middle of the road.
Again, you're using fresh. Probably your entire reference library of movies to rate it. You know,
quit, like don't tell him what he's doing with his data.
Don't mansplain him.
Quit okay. mathsplaining.
It's almost like you need a 50-50 because when you give it a score like that, it's almost doesn't mean that much. You know, when you're almost like getting a 70 on a, you know, you're just the average kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Well, there's a
when
certain,
you give it, you're just like, you have to decide, did you like it or not?
There's certain things that you could consider, you know, Story, is the story worth it? I thought the story was good. Execution, is that any good? Sometimes it is. Sometimes you have great movies that are exciting to watch, but the story is just terrible. So these things balance out, you know?
Right. There's a lot of depth.
Yeah. It's all going in there. Mm-hmm. It's all going in there. I also saw Captain Marvel, and I didn't care for it. In fact, I would say it easily sorted itself out to the very bottom of the Marvel Studios list for me.
Liam Gunnison put it at the bottom of his list.
Liam did as well.
He saw Captain Marvel, and he says it's right above, oh no.
Thor 2?
He has Iron Man 2 and 3 at the bottom of his list, and Captain Marvel right above them.
I like Iron Man 2 and 3 better. Better than, he likes those worse than Incredible
Hulk?
What's his beef with Iron Man 2 and 3? I know a lot of people didn't like Iron Man 2, but Iron Man 3 was pretty
You'll have to get that out of him. I don't know.
I like Iron Man 2 better.
Liam. I didn't go into those questions. Mm.
Yeah, it felt like this is the first time I've ever been like consciously bored in a Marvel movie where I actually stopped and thought like, man, I'm really bored right now. There have been Marvel movies that have had dullness in them, but usually it's like something I notice in retrospect. They're like, oh, that's not as exciting as they often are. I mean, these are popcorn spectacle movies, so
yeah.
You don't usually go in them looking for. We had this whole bit, or Tyler did rather, about how Logan is one of the exceptions to the rule, and that it's a very deliberately paced character drama for a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvel movies are purposefully cut from a very different cloth. They're action adventure movies.
There's a formula.
Yeah, and they usually do quite well.
Yep.
Now, being at the bottom of the Marvel barrel, to me, doesn't mean it's a uniformly bad movie. There were still likable things in it.
Yeah.
But I just...
It's not particularly exciting, though.
No, it felt dull. It felt so clunky to me, like it was a mess of stuff stitched together in a haphazard fashion. I felt like the period piece stuff was super sloppy. It was almost like someone in the room during the editing thing was, you know, like contrast it with other semi-ironic but fun soundtrack placements, like something like Guardians of the Galaxy or even Ragnarok, where... Yeah. There's these pop songs that jump out because they shouldn't be here. This movie had more of a reason to incorporate its 90s alternative, mostly female front, because you had Elastica and Garbage and Hole. And yet it still felt like, okay, they're driving, someone press play on the 90s playlist, and it just randomly plays Elastica for some reason. Or like,
or No Doubt when she's fighting them.
That felt to me a bit cringeworthy.
Yeah,
like it was so on the nose.
Well, it felt to me like I thought they did most of the, or like the girl power statement was really well done. I thought it was really cool, but that part to me felt like.
How do you feel about him saying girl power?
It's fine.
Right. She'll let it. We're good.
She'll let you say it. I felt like that was like almost undermining it because it made it feel silly. It's like she had this big moment where she's like, oh, I've got my real strength. Let me see what it is. Then it feels silly. Like, oh, it's
just girl.
It's not really impactful at this point because it's silly.
I think I was overwhelmed with 90s nostalgia. Yeah.
It could have been anything.
It's funny because the 90s nostalgia really does not have a huge part in the film. Like they want you to feel that 90s, and I feel like the music does most of the work for that. But the time she spends in 90s Los Angeles is such a small part of the film. It's really just when she crashes through Blockbuster and they quick cut over to Radio Shack, and then she has a car chase thing, and then that's that. That's all we see of the 90s in California. Now we're in hangars or in outer space, and they're playing music. Or there's some dumb thermos, which is actually a little older than.
That's why it felt more subtle than as you're describing, like it being cringy. It seemed like it was like.
The song choices were either dumb. The No Doubt thing to me was like, all right. And then when she entered the superior intelligence to meet with Annette Bening. Right?
Yeah, they're playing Nirvana.
And there was just a record player playing Come As You Are. I was like.
Why?
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of cool. It's like spacey because it starts with a like...
That phaser effect. But
well,
that
was on the nose too because she was going to the Supreme Intelligence.
I get it. It's just...
She was. Wait, where were they playing it? In her dream state? Like
yeah.
when she's...
Yeah.
There was a record player in the room.
When she I'm like... Anna.
And she, at this point, has almost no experience on Earth or familiarity with Earth things, and yet
there's no memory of them.
And yet the superior intelligence, which it apparently populates some aspect of itself with memories of the person right. to whom it's communicating, decides to put a record player in there playing Nirvana. And you're just like, why? You just really wanted another... Couldn't right, you just play not? It over the scene? Yeah.
Just like their because motivation for putting that lady in there, it's like some subconscious... She knows this lady, she doesn't know where they're from. Just like the same reason she would know these songs, she doesn't know where she's heard them.
At some
like
point, I guess Carol Danvers, that's her name, right?
Yeah. yeah.
Danvers, she heard yeah. at some point, could have. That makes a little more sense.
But they put the record player in the room so that the Supreme Intelligence can reference the music, which seemed so bizarre. Just yeah. play it over the top and don't reference
it. It's almost like we already paid for Nirvana, but you didn't put it in the movie. It's like, well, I guess write it into this last scene. Yeah. We got to shoot real quick.
Wait, she yeah. referenced, what did she say about the Nirvana song?
She just says
she comments.
She starts dancing to the music, and she just says it's good.
Oh,
God. They didn't need to do that at all.
Say, yeah, they really didn't need to do that. That's what I'm talking about. The whole movie was competent enough, but it felt something about it felt like it was clunky or ham-fisted or awkward. Even the buddy cop aspect of the movie, which was arguably one of the more fun things to watch, her and Fury. They felt to me like they didn't really have... They had a contrived, forced on-screen chemistry rather than... At this point, it seems like Sam Jackson can just play Nick Fury in his sleep. And he does it. He's really likable. It's fun seeing like a less grizzled Nick Fury. And it seemed like he kind of added a new layer to the character by being like, he hasn't always been such a hard-ass. Like in the old days, he was a little more fun.
All that Nick Fury stuff was a good prequel content.
And then one of the common themes I read from other more qualified journalists that were critiquing the movie were all disappointed that whether it was, you know, like her or the direction of the movie, that Brie Larson fell really flat. I haven't seen Room, but I understand that it's like a really noteworthy performance.
She's great in Room, yeah.
Is she the mom in Room?
Yeah.
So it seemed like a lot of people were like, oh, they wasted their star talent. They wasted her. She has all the chemistry of like a piece of paper. And it seemed a little bit like
that. Her character is? Because I agree, she was very like monotone and her eyes were...
That's what I thought. But then by the time that we're reconnecting with her best friend and her, you know, like friend niece for all intents and purposes, they have this view of her as this like dynamic, charismatic, outgoing, life-changing person.
Yeah, but she wasn't her. That's she was like
exactly.
Go ahead, stolen mimic of her. Basically.
She lost her memories, not her personality.
Imagine spending 6 years having no idea where you were for your like the majority of your life. I think that would make you pretty confused
and
pretty
reserved.
You think maybe. This is a deliberate decision?
No.
Why not?
I don't think it's a deliberate decision based on the character arc of her story. I think it's just bad direction.
I think if she was playing it like that on purpose, it was messy.
I think that she was trying to play it tongue in cheek like Chris Pratt did in Guardians.
It seemed to me like someone was telling her, like, I don't know, be a girl, Tony Stark. She was trying to have these snarky lines and deliveries she, to Peter's point, thinks at this point she's a Kree alien lady with no memories. She's like having this fisticuffs brawl with her, you know, hands in shackles on a Skrull ship. And she's like, anybody's know how to get one of these off? No? Okay. Yeah. Like, I'm like, why are you acting like a snarky Earth woman?
It felt like they were injecting Marvel Cinematic Universe comedy into it, and it just wasn't working.
Wait, why not? I mean, it's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
No, it's true. It just felt like the direction, it just didn't, there's something about it that just felt off with her.
There were so many, like, little gaps in the story, where it just, like, moved really fast to get to this next point that, like, completely, like, belittles whatever's happening that it makes you think... It was just clunky. Like, you didn't feel like you could grab it.
Here's my case in point for my clunky accusation is that by the time you get to that scene where it almost seems like the origin story thing, maybe Kevin Feige, producer, or whoever was like, look, we've done origin stories so much. We're on movie 21 at this point. We have to find a new way to do this, or the screenwriter, whoever had the idea to kind of make it like an Amnesiac type of thing.
Yeah, they splice the origin flashbacks along the way.
It seems like maybe that was to the one of the biggest things to the movie's discredit, because if you think about the traditional origin story, yes, we've seen them all a gabillion times. But by the time Iron Man gets out the cave, by the time, you know, Thor is having coffee in New Mexico and all this stuff, we have such an attachment to the character that we want so badly to see them. You know, it's the classic Luke Skywalker, little small person, small story becomes a big person with a big story thing. That by the time we're with Carol Danvers talking to her friend, and she's like, you know, my friend Carol was this person, and she's crying, I don't know who I am. We're like, I was feeling like, we don't either. We don't know who the heck you are. All I've seen is a montage of you falling down. Like, I have no attachment to this character whatsoever. And so I couldn't feel this big triumph.
And it's just the memories that you get when she's attached to the contraption in the ship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Or when she's scanning the bar and she sees herself doing karaoke with her friend.
I fundamentally disagree with you, John. I just, like, first of all, I think Marvel does a super good job. Like, I keep talking about how they've got some formula. They've nailed it. Like, they could keep releasing movies, and somehow they're good. And part of what I like about movies and what makes them good is when they're novel and unpredictable. And that's how it felt. Like, even her, the way she was, like, you guys want her to be some specific, like, oh, she doesn't fit this, like, character type that she should. And it's like, that's why I like it. Like, she... immediately she made a joke, and I was like, oh man, hopefully they're not gonna try to make this kind of awkward actor like be super funny the whole time and it's gonna be awkward. But I thought it wasn't. Like, she was a little awkward, but it felt like that's who she was. She was she'd lost her memory. She still has this like human part of her where she doesn't like listening to rules, and she's kind of funny at times, and she's still conflicted. And then again, like you guys are talking, oh, like the origin story thing, like I don't want to see that again. I do not care. And I think Marvel knows that, and they did a good job. They're just like, screw it, let's skip ahead. And even I remember when she lands on Earth, and I'm like, here we go. It's going to be this annoying thing where
she's in a blockbuster.
Yeah. Well, I was just like, she's going to not have access to her technology, and she's going to be stranded, and we're going to have to go through this with her. And I was like getting ready to be annoyed at that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. She was not impeded by being on Earth. She immediately like deciphered or took apart some phone.
She built an ET machine.
Redo Shack.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was cool. It was like it kept doing that to me, where I kept expecting something and then it didn't do that, and I was like, great. And at that point, I thought there was a lot of emotion there, because it's like it's putting you in a journey that she would have had. Like, how can she possibly, you know, she didn't know anything. So just people being like, oh my God, you're my friend, I love you so much. It's like, you know, that's how it would feel. It'd feel like a long time has passed, and all of a sudden people are just telling you this. You know?
Yeah, I understand. I think that they must have been thinking, we're going to have to like put the audience in her perspective and give the audience as little access to her memories as she has.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't need it to follow the standard origin story formula per se. I just think that by the time we were supposed to, as an audience, it seemed like the movie was telling us, now you should be excited and like really moved for her and her story. And I'm like, I still don't know what it is. I don't care. I have no attachment to her whatsoever. Even the big, you know, like triumphant, you know, motif about her falling down and getting up that they've strung together with these montage shots of moments we haven't experienced as the audience, which is, again, fine, but it made...
You mean by the end where she's talking to the Supreme Intelligence and she says, yes, I am human, and then it's the montage of...
Yeah, and then we see her, like, in her training, all stuff that we can deduce, like, yeah, she had to go through these things, and it was powerfully edited and soundtracked and everything, but it didn't... Compare it to another superhero girl power moment when, you know, Wonder Woman climbs out of the trench and finally reveals the costume for the first time, just like in Captain, or this happens way earlier in the film. So Captain Marvel's a build up all the way to the end by the time she turns into basically God and can do anything. It just felt like to me, like I... Or any of the other origin stories, girl power or not, where you're like, by the time they do something, regardless of the formula, you have to have a sense of attachment to the character and their story to really sympathize. But by going the amnesiac route all the way to the end, I was just like, I don't know that I really care.
I feel like they were she was like uncovering it. It wasn't just like a full big reveal at the end.
That's a good point.
There was some layers.
There were, yeah, but they were insignificant.
And if you don't entirely like, you know, agree with this character, or you know, you don't like see eye to eye, or like, you know, in the context of the Marvel universe, like that's fine. There's gonna be a thousand of them. Like, there's gonna be maybe a couple particular heroes that you like and you really identify with. But this, you know, just because you don't identify with this particular character, I don't think that's a big deal. You know, I think that other people might, and it kind of caters to different. You know what I'm saying?
Well, sure. Yeah, but we made this whole podcast just to sit here and argue about
it. Yeah, and I'm telling you why you're wrong.
Like, how about this? Peter just disarmed the entire You Hate Movies formula by being like, it's all right, guys. We can like different things.
So, well, I got some grief with it. Or like,
what is your grief with it?
Well, I thought the cat thing was really funny.
Oh, boy.
You know, like where they kept being like, oh, my God. Like, you know, and they even I don't know the guy's name, that actor.
Scroll?
Yeah. What's the deal with his voice?
Ben Mendelsohn.
What accent is that?
He's Australian.
Oh, really? His Scroll just like, I don't know, just like rolls. That's not it. It's really satisfying. I don't know. What? Yeah. Can you do it?
No.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's right. Like,
he doesn't sound like that. No, it is a unique Australian accent.
He like drags. Anyways, yeah. I really like it.
It's like a mix of Russian and Australian.
I don't know about
that. That's another weird thing about all sci-fi genre movies. Where like, why do we have all these different Earth accents in space?
Yeah. Jude Law is just doing his thing. He's a Greek.
Speaking Queen's English up there.
So what is your problem with it?
Oh, I just thought it was like the whole cat thing.
I thought it
was really funny until they made the cat an actual big monster.
No, that was the payoff of the whole movie.
I thought it'd be pretty hilarious if they kept thinking that this like really innocuous, like can't hurt you animal is like, and even scary. When they put the teeny little mask over its face, I thought that was so funny.
This is a real pet, it's her pet from the comic.
But okay. can we at least comment on this aspect? Actually, here's where I disagree, Peter, and have to defend Captain Marvel. I thought the payoff of the tentacle monster was surprising, and I laughed out loud. I was like, flirking. Yeah. But the thing that I didn't like about the cat was that it was often easy for me to say because I don't have to make a big budget special effects movie, but it seemed often unnecessarily CG. Like, to the point that it was an eyesore. They would just carry it in the room, and it would be fake. I'm like, why in the world is it CG? Like,
yeah, Patrick knows this.
Yeah, because Brie Larson is allergic to cats.
So they were faking it.
It had to be fake.
Wow.
Like, it's one thing when they have it plastered against the wall flat for that stupid punchline, the zero-gravity cat. And if its face is going to turn into tentacles, that makes sense. But it would just be like a character holding it, and it would be so fake looking, like Scooby-Doo is on screen.
Yeah
it's
how
almost
come they
like
can't make that
CG,
cat look
there was a lot of CG in the film that wasn't great.
We have photorealistic apes.
Hey, but come back to
Sam Jackson's de-aging thing I thought was
his
really
face
good,
looked good.
Crazy.
Yeah, his face looked really good.
I'd love to, I mean, I'm sure we'll learn eventually, I'd love to see what exactly that was, like a combination of prosthetics and CG, you think?
Probably makeup and
CG. And they were using scenes from movies of him in that time period.
Pulp Fiction.
They couldn't use Pulp Fiction because of the facial hair.
He's got a beard and everything.
The right thing where he's sitting behind that radio microphone.
In the last movie we watched, or one of the last movies we watched, we've got at least two, if not more, fully CG otherworldly characters that are humanoid in nature, but for some reason inexplicably are CG from the ground up. And yet the Skrulls we're going to do with a mask. Like, why? What is going on over there?
Remember how we talked about how Ragnarok was just a little too Lord of the Rings? Well, Captain Marvel was just way too Star Trek for me, you know?
Their faces look very Star Trek.
So Star Trek.
Yeah. I almost, for a second, thought they were in the same universe. Like, honestly, when I saw the guy walk in, I'm like, is that like Klingons or something?
Just walking around on a spaceship with all that makeup on and those weird uniforms, it just felt so Star Trek.
I think, yeah. There's some species of Star Trekians that look just like whatever they...
Klingon or something. The relationship I have my affection for Guardians of the Galaxy did a lot of heavy lifting for me to endure the weird sci-fi-ness of this.
It was pretty high sci-fi.
You hate sci-fi that much?
No, I like science fiction, but I don't like Star Trek science fiction.
Yes.
It's just
Guardians is way more cut from a Star Wars cloth than a Star Trek cloth.
Yeah.
Do you not like Star Trek the show, or do you not like Star Trek the movies?
Just this, they're all the same.
As an idea, man.
I don't know. I feel like the movies are significantly better than the show.
Sure, they're better. The quality is better. And even the whole premise of Star Trek itself is interesting. But just the way that they portray other species of aliens, they're just humans, very clearly humans in prosthetics.
With something taped to their
nose. Maybe there's something about our, you know, humanoid form that's like convenient or evolution
it
lends
makes it
itself.
Much easier. This is we're going back to our Terminator conversation.
why did they build humanoid robots?
Why do all aliens have to be bipedal? Why did they have to build a robot that just looks like a human when they could have built a killing machine?
So maybe he wanted a robot made out of razor blades and
he set a ball of razor blades.
Yeah. Yes. Not be unstoppable. Put it in a cage.
I appreciated all of the context that Guardians gave me for Captain Marvel because it made it a lot more enjoyable, at least.
Sure.
It was interesting how connected they were from the get-go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I already knew who the Kree were. I knew who Ronan the Accuser was.
Yeah. Ronan didn't know he was going to get a phone call.
come on back.
Come put this hood on one more time.
Less makeup, but just as much.
Peter and Abby, surely we can agree that the ending was bad for Captain Marvel. She just has the most superpowers ever. It's like, oh, she can shoot lasers out of her arms. That's cool enough. No, she can just fly and breathe in space and do
she's
everything.
Totally invulnerable and can project her body through a giant. Like,
and she knows how to control all these things with the turn of a dime. And then we're like, oh my gosh, you can protect their Earth. She's like, bye, and just flies away.
I don't think
she does get very powerful very fast.
She's been stifled this entire time. People have been holding her back. Like,
I totally agree. Law has purposefully trained her to not use her powers.
Yeah, right. and then when she does the thing where she totally is able to like
fly, she's Iron Man.
Right. She's like plummeting to her death, and it's like you either gonna make a decision about using your powers and figuring it out, or you're gonna die.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was sufficient motivation.
No, I mean,
what
we're talking
point.
About is like she's completely aware. She's just articulated, if not, she's about to articulate that her now life purpose is to end the conflict between the Kree and the Skrull. She's looking headlong into the figurehead of
the
Kree
tyrant
war
that
violence.
Genocide.
She kills everyone in his whole crew instantaneously and then waves goodbye to him and lets him go.
Right.
Because he's got to be alive in the next
movie. You're making a lot of assumptions.
What are you talking about?
He's got to be alive in Guardians.
We don't know who was in those ships. We don't know if they were totally autonomously controlled and not.
They were the
accusers. It shows people inside the ship going,
And exploding and dying?
Yeah, it shows them see her and then like firelight, doesn't it? Tyler watched it.
Yeah,
twice.
It was she blew up one of the ships by just flying through it, and then she swings around and parks right in front of Ronan and then hits her palm with her fist and then they fly away.
They're like, we better go.
And my criticism too is why is she letting them just leave?
Right.
But he needs to be alive for Guardians.
I don't think that's it. Maybe she doesn't want to kill people. Maybe those other ships were autonomously flying. She would be very familiar with what those ships look like and how they behave.
We'd have to go frame by frame, but I'm pretty sure that this giant spaceship is housing more than just
bombs. I mean, even today in our like pathetic technology compared to the Marvel universe.
Giant drones.
Yeah, why
drones
not?
Drones the size.
They just need. They need to be big
buildings.
In order to house the rockets that they deploy.
Okay, fine.
Like, why do they need?
She didn't
want to
kill Ronan. Why didn't she go get him?
Yeah.
Why didn't put him in jail?
Oh, you're the dude, and you're a few feet from me, so I better fly over here.
Had she made that decision yet in that scene, or did she go back to Earth and then
she goes back and tells Jude Law that she has a message for him?
So so she just scared him.
Yeah,
she scared him off.
Maybe she was maybe this is my first time flying. Maybe I shouldn't push my luck.
She's like, crap, man. Maybe I figured this all out right away. This is great.
She seemed pretty amped up. She's ready to do some.
She didn't want to kill him. You know, she saw him face to face. She didn't want to kill him.
And maybe he was scared. He had seen what she had just done, and he was like, holy crap.
Of course he was.
He even says that what he wants is her.
She's the weapon.
Yeah, he's like, we got to come back for the weapon. And they say, oh, the engine or whatever. He's like, no, the woman.
The woman. But the engine is. I do appreciate how they wrote in an Infinity Stone to this film. film.
Because of the Tesseract?
Yeah. That the Tesseract was, oh, here we are again with the Tesseract.
It is kind of funny, though, that, like, that Captain Marvel, who's supposed to now become, like, the beacon of what it means to be the most powerful being in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and everything, she essentially just got her powers Daredevil style. Something spilled on her.
Yeah.
It's like, whoops.
Yeah, but I think it is really powerful. That's why I think she's able to do the things she does. It's not like, to me, it seems way weirder that a spider bites a guy and now he can shoot things out of his hand and fly across the country. And
remember this? What is it? It is. I just mean that, like, compared to some of the other characters who are more like, you know, a Tony Stark or a Black Widow, who are totally vulnerable because all they have is their skill sets. She doesn't really have a skill set. Some, like, something exploded on her, like a spider bit. You know what I mean? Like,
she does, but she does have a skill set because she knows she can fight. Yeah, and
Jude
she
Law taught her how to wrestle.
Here's a great 90s reference, Peter. Maybe you'll like it. Remember The Secret Life of Alex Mack?
Sure.
Where the radioactive stuff spilled on that girl?
She's Alex Mack.
She's Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen. That's exact same thing that happened to him, and he turned into God.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Or Superman.
That's like the exact problem. Yeah. Don't tell me you didn't like that.
It's actually not that.
It's not that I don't like it. I'm just saying it's funny that she's already being made out to be more than that. It's like, that's incredible.
Yeah. I think part of it, too, is
at least Daredevil's
she probably
a ninja.
Has a key piece in Endgame. And well, she has to be really powerful.
Well, according to her comic book storyline, she is the most powerful character in the Marvel Universe.
Well, not really in the comic book. She was kind of just on the team.
She seems like she's like their backup plan. I mean, they've got a pager to call her.
Yeah, in the movie, she didn't answer those.
That's not the case.
Either Nick Fury didn't think it was worth bothering her about aliens attacking the whole world in the first Avengers, or when an evil AI tried to kill the whole world again, or she was like,
this problem is like on the scale of presumably the universe as opposed to a single planet.
He wiped out half the universe, so she should be fully aware of something just gone wrong.
Totally, but I'm just saying, like, it makes sense that he would reserve such a powerful being.
Maybe he's been beeping her the whole time. She just didn't get it the first time.
He's got all these other Avengers.
Beeping ever since, like, the first time.
He's like, shoes.
What's up? I'm just trying to see how you're doing.
He's got Tony Stark.
What you think about?
Captain America right there next to him. He's probably not worried yet. He's like, it's weird. These guys do.
It didn't feel weird to y'all when you're suddenly dropped back into the MCU as we know it, and you're seeing it. You're like, oh, crap. I almost felt like I was doing something wrong. Like, oh, I don't want to see this. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah.
I'm watching a real movie.
Right. Hair.
Oh, my gosh. Black Widow. That whole time I was laughing. Like, what? Mm-hmm. She's like calling shots. She's like, we need this. Why is she even Avenger? All she does is spin kicks. She's like, call me when the thing turns back on. Like,
she's skilled in espionage.
she's the most ridiculous character.
She's military tactics.
Espionage
is
like on a universe scale. Her stupid espionage on Earth means nothing.
She's an Earthling. Yeah.
She's useless. Like, tell her to go home.
School hard
boy. You're going to die. Like a loose.
She's getting her own
shot. It's going to kill her.
Black Widow's getting her own movie finally.
For real?
She can't turn into a rocket and fly through a spaceship. And she's getting more done. Where's Captain Marvel been this whole time?
Fighting, she's been doing justice, something. Apparently.
First I was like, she's way overpowered. It's going to not be fun. Then I was like, oh, he already did everything. I guess she can time travel? She can't really do much
now.
Yeah,
that's the other question. Is
that's just the time stone.
So
we haven't seen any trailers. I don't even know.
We're already on to Endgame here. We still have to finish Captain.
Oh, I was gonna say, you guys said she couldn't. She could breathe in space. I don't think that wasn't necessarily.
I thought that suit makes her do something.
Yeah, but she was wearing the mohawk thing. But in the last scene, she wasn't.
She wasn't, and she had her coat on.
Oh, you're right.
But pilot coat. Each scene, like, which scene are you talking about specifically?
Well, she
part of her
Ronan.
Suit
that could have been in high Earth orbit where there's rarefied gas,
part of
rarefied
her
air, and she could still breathe a little.
Her suit. Let
just
me answer your
bit.
Question.
Low Earth orbit.
Quit asking the question over and over, and I'll answer it for you.
Mean?
He wants it asked just right.
Her suit is very similar to Peter Quill's in Guardians of the Galaxy, where they have that weird force field type element that covers their face, so they can fly through space and breathe just fine. He had the one that just goes in his ear, and then it whole
the whole thing
materializes.
Sci-fi. Yeah.
Because so, sci-fi.
Right. So he takes it, he puts it on Gamora when she's out in space. It's the same technology that she's using, like underwater and flying around. And
right.
when she's crash landing, holding on to Jude Law's ship, she uses it. But then at the very end, when she's just becomes Rogue from X-Men.
But she effectively creates an aura around her.
No, so she just wasn't even using it.
This is Peter's conjecture.
I'm saying her, no, like that force field, it like covers her entire head.
She realized she's so powerful, she didn't.
No, I mean, if she traps a little bit of air in there.
Well, I mean, still, she's using her powers to,
I don't know,
create a situation where she can breathe in space.
Maybe.
She's not using technology.
Certainly, but she's not like all of a sudden able to
physically. They threw out all logic at the end because she is out there waving to the Skrull through the windshield of that spaceship. And she's just floating there in her pilot's jacket, no mask, and then they beam into the distance, and she just flies alongside.
She flew for
she's
like
shooting through. She's
how long can you hold your breath, Tyler?
I don't know. Hold her breath. But that's for not like even the big question minutes. Here. She's shooting through outer space at the same speed as these spaceships.
Certainly,
seemingly at light speed, which I guess doesn't exist at this point.
It's not light speed. It wasn't articulated.
Well, they were trying to develop
light speed. Right. Well, that's the point. If she,
didn't
if
exist.
The engine was light speed,
but she's not even inside the ship. Get in the ship, Carol Danvers.
Maybe she flew right to the hangar.
There it is.
You don't know that's this.
They left Earth.
I was specifically watching, and I'm like, "There's no way she's just gonna fly
by
the ship."
They were in the hangar.
She was pushing the ship, man. She was steering it.
It just showed. It showed. I remember specifically because I thought that was funny. I'm like, there's no way she's going to fly all the way to wherever they're going, right?
Yep.
And when both of the objects left, they like merged. Met at one point. Yeah, they merged. So it's like it can.
Here's what
can
I think.
Assume that
what
she just
we're
got
arguing
on the ship.
About. Whether or not she gets on the ship in the distance.
Does, for sure.
You know what I think?
That'd be ridiculous.
You know how sometimes you say goodbye to someone, but then you both turn around and start walking the same way? You're like, oh, haha, I guess we're going to walk the same way for a little bit. But then at some point you diverge.
Yeah, maybe
that's
what
they
happened.
Did.
Yeah, that's.
Hey, here's a big question for you guys about the movie. Why is this movie called Captain Marvel?
She takes on the identity of Mar-Vell, right?
Does she? There's
yeah, but
nothing
the movie's
in the movie.
Captain Marvel,
and
not
she's
Marvel.
She's a pilot. She's captain.
Was she a captain?
Yeah.
Is she a captain?
Said captain on her.
Yeah.
You know, in the comic book
is
not.
What rank is that?
Her
is that
call name
is
not Avenger. It's Cheeseburger.
Why is Captain America a captain?
Did y'all hear Patrick? That's important.
So wait, what'd you say?
The call name is not Avenger. It's Cheeseburger.
In the comic book?
In the comic book, yeah.
So really?
Carol Cheeseburger Danvers.
Which I appreciate.
For real?
Come back,
her name
Cheeseburger.
Is Cheeseburger Marvel.
Well, it's like on the plane, you know, it said Avenger, and that's where he is.
Here's another big problem. Nice. So Captain America is not the first Avenger. We called a whole movie that.
Yeah, Captain America was.
Yeah.
He was in the 40s.
Huh?
Wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, the 40s. Good one, Abby.
That's the 90s.
I know, but.
He's set in the 40s.
We're led
so
to believe that
he was in ice when she
the
was
whole name. I guess okay. We're saying that in principle, he's the first person
the first
to take
one,
on an Avenger-like role.
Right.
Okay,
in
that's
principle.
Fine. That makes sense.
So
we cleared that
good,
up.
Good, and you give it a 5 score.
Yeah, 5 out of 5. My eye was fine.
Oh, here's the other thing. So he like Nick Fury gets this cat or alien scratch his eye, right?
Oh yeah.
And then that's why he loses it. But that night at dinner, he's just talking about, oh yeah, I don't know, this is gonna. My eyes a little weird.
My eyes being funny. Let me sing a song. Woo-hoo,
yeah,
washing dishes.
And then he's like the next scene. He just got an eye patch on. He would be like,
he
doubled
was,
over.
He was in such pain that he was like delirious.
Yeah,
it was, yeah.
He was delirious. Really hit. Maybe he's just awesome. I guess.
That was really funny. Where he's like, oh, it's just a scratch, and the guy's like, no.
Yeah, that was.
I laughed out loud.
The funniest bit, and this is to me why the movie you can tell the movie fell flat. Yeah, at least in my opinion, is that I remember specifically which moments I laughed at, whereas most Marvel movies now, ever since post-Avengers, have been had so much comedy in them that it's hard to remember even. You're just like, yeah, it was funny. I laughed a lot. The conversation between the Skrulls when they're like waiting for the CD-ROM to load, and she's like, what's happening? And they're like, oh, it's loading. But they play it so cool. Like, Nick Fury just says it as though, like, he doesn't have to. Why would he explain that? He's like, it's loading. And then they're like, wait, it's just up there? And he like looks at the other Skrull and he's like, you're supposed to be the science
guy? Oh, okay, so that is, but that wasn't...
Finding the lab in orbit.
Yeah, yeah. The other one just kind of shrugs like,
You're describing... Okay, so that's the second. You're describing two scenes. Well, the loading scene, and then... Because I was going to guess you were...
Those two distinct?
Yeah, describe
those two moments.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Genuinely funny.
In the loading scene, they're Skrulls?
They brought the audio to her to listen to.
Yeah, the Skrulls had a CD-ROM with the audio on it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and don't let that slip right by.
Yeah, was it? No, it was in the black box from the airplane.
Yeah, and then they discovered...
The black box makes a CD-ROM?
The audio that the Skrulls brought her is from the black box from the crash.
But was the CD-ROM itself?
From the audio, yeah. From the audio that they spent time watching load, they learned that the lab is in orbit, and they went, you're supposed to be the science guy.
No, because that happened way later. That happened at
the house.
Girlfriend's house.
I'm with
Tyler. Because I remember they're in the living room.
At her co-pilot's house.
It was all at her co-pilot's
house. Oh, all of it was at the co-pilot's house. Yeah, okay, that's a good point.
They became buddies when they figured out it was in orbit, and then they went and listened to the thing.
Her buddy is a horrible mom. Because she's like, oh, God, look at that. Aliens are real. Oh, man, one of them's got my kid out there. Oh, well.
Yeah, that was weird.
Hey, but come on in. That kid is a genius because she figured out how to turn that lady's suit by just pushing the button.
Yeah, but I can do that. Let me comment on that, too, because that, to me, was on par with the cat. Not because of the logic of, you know, color-changing interfaces are fairly intuitive. You ever seen one with, like, a color wheel? You move the little circle around and colors change. Yeah. They're pretty intuitive. But the way that she was operating it, clearly sight unseen, because they just director tells her, you know, I'll move your finger around and we'll animate a thing in later.
Yeah.
And it looked like no person would ever operate anything like this. She was just like stabbing her finger around in a weird pattern and like the color was changing very delicately. I was like, this didn't work. Right.
Oh, man, it sounds like some guy who's never seen that technology. You don't know what how it operates.
It spoke to
you. You're just like, based on my iOS, that does not look right. You would never get colors to change on iOS.
Right, man. You're dumb.
Stop it.
I actually...
I'm so sexist. I can't love.
Yeah.
I would love to hear more from Abby about what she thought about the movie in general, because this is the first Marvel...
She's making a face.
First female-led Marvel film.
Mm-hmm.
And it, how do you think that it did in that sense of it being a female-led Marvel film compared to, say, Wonder Woman or... Catwoman or
the Halle Berry movie
or 2000s what was Daredevil's girlfriend's name?
Oh, Elektra. She got her own movie too, huh?
Yeah, she got her own movie. How do you think that this does
Jessica Jones
on the landscape of female-led superhero films? How does this do?
I feel like it has done the best so far, and I really like Wonder Woman a lot. To me, the girl power stuff was done.
She looked at Josh and Patrick.
Well, to be fair, her eyes just cut back and forth. We don't know.
Well, can you guys elaborate on what it was specifically that seemed like very agenda, you know?
I didn't use the word.
I would say it's empowerment, like female empowerment.
Well, what like specifically? Like, what about it being a girl made it any, like if it was a guy?
I think the female empowerment storyline in there was enormously influential to the story.
Hmm. Yeah, there was probably... Now I can't remember super specifics. I remember one specific with Jude Law.
Yeah.
But scattered throughout the film, there was like...
Huge moments.
Big moments.
Is there one thing with Jude Law where she says to him, I don't have to prove myself? Because that's the only time I was like, oh, that felt
that
like...
That was good.
A very specific...
Yeah, that was good.
Like woman...
Well, there were times they kept accusing her of being emotional to discredit her.
Yeah.
But I thought that was associated with humans, because when she shows up and starts talking to...
The Kree and
well, see, that's
thing.
Why it's so good, because it fits in the story just as it is, but the underlying context is
a subtext.
He's telling about
subtext female oppression.
Oh, man, you guys are reading into
this. I think...
No, we're not.
It's very deliberately...
No, that's like the most common discredit to women, is that they're too emotional.
Right. No, I understand that, but it just seemed like when she was describing this to... Gosh, Samuel L. Jackson... What's his character's name?
Fury. We've seen him.
He was just like, you know, we screw up. What is? I don't care. He empathizes with her and says that, you know, or maybe she isn't even telling him. He just is talking about how because we're human, you know, we are emotional or do stuff, are reckless. I can't remember the specific
words. It
wasn't
so much about being human. It was far more about being a woman.
He was saying that it's more about being a woman.
The way that I look at Captain Marvel is that You watch Black Panther, and Black Panther fits into that very traditional Marvel formula where it's the plot points causing conflict could be anything in Black Panther, but they injected social justice issues and underlying narrative of black people in America into those plot points. Right. I think that they structured all of Captain Marvel around the storyline of women being empowered and breaking free from male oppression. And that's why the storyline for Captain Marvel feels clunky, because it's like sitting on top of what is a very nice streamlined story arc for her as a woman.
I was going to say that to compare it to Black Panther, which makes sense because there's very clear social commentary that's poignant at the moment in both films. The Black Panther thing to me, though, seems so much more seamlessly integrated into the film's natural narrative.
Yeah. Disagree.
Because the whole premise of the Eric Killmonger character being like a disowned Wakandians, and the idea of his experience in America as a black man versus the Wakandan, in his mind, privileged experience, and how he wants Wakanda to use their resources, and, you know, like, T'Challa doesn't want to use their... It wove itself effortlessly into the premise of the movie, and then happened to make a very poignant statement about...
Yes, but that was more about these two men having different perspectives on how to use the resources, because by that standard, Wakandans don't have that experience that black people have.
Yeah, America. Exactly, which is why the movie was so interesting.
Yeah, right? they injected into that story. They injected that social commentary into the story. But I'm saying in Captain Marvel, they built the story on top of that on top of her narrative of becoming empowered as her own.
So I guess it's just a matter of which. I liked in Black Panther that it was woven into me. It felt like it made sense. This one almost to me felt like someone said, look, you got to make it about, you got to have these things in there as well. Can you make the story fit into that? And someone's like, I'll try.
Marvel
felt clunky.
That's why it felt subtle. With Black Panther, it was so on the nose. It's like, check this out. He's like a poor black guy from California. He plays basketball. Here we go. It's like such a start. You know, like, it was so obvious. Like, the equivalent of that would be...
That was Killmonger's experience, not...
Right, Killmonger's experience. Sure, for sure.
He said in Black Panther.
Yeah.
I didn't say any specific name. I'm just saying one of the characters. I think it was like...
Yeah, Killmonger's experience outside of Wakanda was that.
Right. But the point is it was very on the nose where... in this, like, the equivalent of that would be like, this is some corporate professional female trying to make it through and she keeps getting shut down, you know, like some kind of stereotype for why what women
are
know,
you
like,
talking about. That's exactly what happens. She wants to be a pilot, like, and they won't even let the women fly, and they're like, you know what, it's called a cockpit.
But that's like a...
I love that
it's
we got
kind
that
of a unique...
Time.
Like, how many women do you know in the Air Force trying to be... You know, that's not like... That's like some kind of very unique storyline for a woman, as opposed to like a pretty potentially generic one for like impoverished African-Americans. Like,
the specifics of her being trying to be a pilot might be a small percentage of female story, but...
Which made it feel subtle,
but
as opposed
to
like...
They just speak to the experience of women trying to make it in a man's world. Burst.
Yeah, so comment. Back to you. We quickly started mansplaining all of that to you.
Yeah.
How do you feel as a woman watching Captain Marvel compared to these other either female-led movies or even just social justice narrative films?
Yeah. I felt like it was done subtly, but that's why it was done well. And I agree with Peter.
Preach, sister.
The super obvious. I also really liked Black Panther.
I disagree with you. Stop preaching.
And I feel like, but the reason I like Black Panther is, or maybe both of these movies, is they feel different than other Marvel movies.
Yeah, that's true.
They do, yeah.
And maybe that's just my preference for movies. But,
different.
I like different.
You love the movies you love.
You love the Marvel movies that aren't so Marvel-y.
Yep. Maybe I'm sick of it after 20 movies.
Sure.
Anyway. I think that the, dang it, what was I going to say?
Do you need more mansplaining?
I have a question.
Okay, I'll take a question.
Wonder Woman, she was pretty cool and all.
Yeah.
But
that's not a question.
Why was she so sexualized?
Totally.
Yes.
And Captain Marvel managed to get through an entire Hollywood film without being sexualized.
Yep.
Did a good job.
So I have...
She had the big breastplates.
Yeah, I have two feelings on this. I think that one, it was really cool to see a female in like a role like this, and she wasn't in like, you know, some scantily clad, like, let's show off her body because it's a female body, whatever. When they clearly do that for men, like, you know, Thor is always shirtless. And
yes, there is a lot of objectifying the men in the male Marvel universe.
It's got to be,
yes,
a shirtless shot, even with Paul Rudd.
But it was, to me, weird that she had done so much training, Brie Larson, and she was, like, super ripped, really strong, but you would never know it.
Yeah.
So you wanted a shirtless shot.
Or at least just her arms
something
exposed.
Something that
made her look buff.
Like,
let the audience appreciate that she had gotten into shape.
Yeah, that she had, like, even if she had done something in the movie to be, like, lift up something that was, like, real, that they had actually filmed it, I think that would have been cool to be, like, see, people can, like...
Yeah. Well, you know, like, it's interesting.
Show how strong they are without showing, like, their, you know, ripped body.
Yeah, I wonder, do you think that there's an element of that with the men in it? I mean... Yes, it's probably inarguable that we have to have Chris Hemsworth topless for the female demographic. And I have heard many a woman say, oh, my God, he's, look at him with his shirt off and
it
all that.
It is impressive.
So he's there to be objectified in that sense. Chris Evans coming out of that pod in First Avenger, you're just like, good grief, you know. But there's also something about, like, in the for the... hetero male audience in the sense of like
Matt Hughes
fantasy,
like,
wish fulfillment, that idol, to be like, man, it's just awesome to see like somebody super strong, and like, we want to know that Chris Hemsworth worked out because he's supposed to be freaking Thor.
Do you think Chris Hemsworth put in his contract that if he was going to work out all this time,
you better freaking show
he
it
needs to be able to show it off?
Yeah. I think it's more for men, honestly, than it is for women. In that kind of, like, have you ever gone to the gym with a bunch of dudes who are I used to work out, and it's like, all the dudes are just doing it for other dudes. At that point, girls do not care. It's like, most girls grossed out by, like, really shredded, buff dudes, like, real ones, not ones in the movies. So I think it's mostly for us guys. And I'm into it. You know,
but in the same way, I would have loved to see, like... Not Wonder Woman costume, but like
not totally
something.
Afraid of skin. Yeah.
I think that like maybe the idea was that, you know, it's like if you show anything, it's just like maybe it does have an agenda, and I wanted to be like, you know what, it's not at all about physical shape. You know, they wanted to like just omit that, whether it was like just
her
arms or something.
Yeah, then why did poor Brie Larson have to do training for a month?
Yeah.
Well, I have two thoughts. Maybe it's if you have that muscle on you, you carry yourself differently for the whole performance of the movie. That
could she sure had that one stance.
She did have that.
And but also the quarterback stance for the whole movie. And you can tell she's like defined. She's not like blobby.
But they also filmed Endgame before Captain Marvel, so we haven't seen what is in that one.
Yeah, you know, maybe she's got like a tank top.
I think that at the very least, maybe they were being very careful not to sexualize her at all, so that women finally have a female-led movie where they're not being sexualized.
You have to also admit that all the different factors that go into the accusation that someone like Wonder Woman is sexualized, though, because, yes, she's very beautiful, old gal, mm-hmm. right? Gal's very beautiful. She wears a tiny little skirt and all that stuff. And so you've got the studio being like, we want to see her, I'm presuming. Warner Brothers is like, we want to make sure that, you know, you show her looking hot. And so the director's like, oh, God, okay, we'll try. You know, that's a
female
minimum.
Director.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, like she's having to operate the corporate world of making a big studio film.
Right.
And then they've also got people that work for DC and Warner Brothers going, you need to have her in a costume that's recognizable to the iconic character.
Right.
Or so everyone's going to go bananas over that.
It goes way back to just the original drawings and illustrations of her as a character. Right.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel.
But I feel like
it
was gratuitous in Wonder Woman, which is fine. I'm not ever bothered by that, but it was like, you know, shots from her legs like all the way up where it's like, we don't need to see like close up.
Yeah, but
thighs.
You have to admit that though that's true. If you had seen Suicide Squad, you'd see the other end of the spectrum of like, why are we just... The camera is just straight up on her butt cheeks for no reason in the world. But they also made Wonder Woman's physical appearance part of the girl power. Like when she comes out of that trench again, one of the cooler moments in the movie
is that it's distracting to men.
Yeah, it was like she was stronger than they were, and it was that to me that moment to me wasn't sexualized at all. It was like such an awesome reveal because at that point her costume is part of her heritage and her people.
Yeah, she kept saying, "I wear this to fight. I don't even know why people are looking at me."
Right.
She's just doing what she wants to do.
So I did a little of both.
That's true.
Captain Marvel had the breastplates.
Yeah. Well,
which is funny. Why do they make these spacesuits with some have boobies on them, but the others, the men ones,
more
are
comfortable,
flat?
I guess.
Yeah, they need some room in there.
I agree. In my first viewing of this thing, it felt clunky, like you were saying. It felt even a little boring at times. But when you follow these cues of her following this narrative of female empowerment, I think that the storyline becomes a lot stronger. Because the rest of it really is sitting on top of it, and the way that it plays out is actually pretty interesting. I feel like maybe it's to its own discredit, it was too subtle. All of these female empowerment moments, and the way that it does play out is with her fighting Jude Law, where he's essentially man telling her what she can't do, and then you find out that man changes her identity, and then. Men, like we're saying, is telling her that she's too emotional even to be a Kree warrior. But then it goes on to later with her friend, right after they do that whole black box scene. It's a woman has to tell her who she is, right? The woman says, "You're Carol Danvers, and you're the most." I think she even says, "You were the most powerful person I know."
Yeah.
And then she is able to claim her own identity, but what's interesting to me, too, is what Peter was saying, is that even at that point where she's been told who she is and she claims her own identity back, Jude Law is like, you'd have to prove yourself to me on his terms. He's like, get rid of the light show and fight me on my terms to prove yourself to me. And then she says, I don't have to prove anything to you.
Right.
So she's establishing her own power on her own terms. And that right there is a very intentional, streamlined...
Yeah.
Plot arc, character development arc for her.
Yeah.
That the rest of it is clunky, but that underneath the whole time is very strong.
That especially that payoff with Jude Law then was very powerful.
Yeah, that was satisfying. We totally wanted to see him get blown away.
And throughout the movie, they had been building to that. Like he multiple scenes of him being like, tone it down. Don't be thinking for yourself. Like type of thing.
Trying to control. They were clearly trying to keep her on a short leash.
And he was a subtle bad guy. Like when you think about it, he becomes more of a bad guy. But in the movie, I felt like
he was likable in the first act.
He was very likable. Then even when it turned, you're kind of like, oh, I kind of like him. I don't want him to be the bad guy.
Yeah. That again is a credit to that. Maybe it's a little too subtle, or maybe it's just too realistic. Because
I thought it made it more powerful, especially the payoff.
The men closest to women are sometimes the ones. Controlling them the most damaging them the most.
All that stuff was I thought that I mean the all the stuff that kicked up the firestorm of debate was ended up being silly on both sides, because I mean these people that are going to get mad about the idea that there's, you know, the most powerful being in the MCU is a woman, it's like, why do we even care what someone like that thinks? Just let them do their bad reviews or whatever.
Right.
And then the people who were kind of trying to stir up a firestorm to make it into a cause for advocacy is just like, well, surely you're going to be disappointed too if that's what you're...
Right.
Because there is a certain amount of subtlety, and then there's a certain amount of like overtness to it. That side of it didn't feel ham-fisted to me at all. It could have been a lot stronger and it would have been fine. The architecture of the movie itself and the narrative, like there's a lot of pieces there that like abstracted from the experience of watching it seem really cool. I like the idea of the Skrulls turning out to be the kind of the victims in the story. They were refugees that had been exploited by a more powerful people.
Yeah,
that was really interesting. But when it happens in the movie, I was just kind of like, oh, okay.
I actually thought, that twist wasn't as rewarding. But I remember when that finally happened, it made a lot more sense to me of who the Kree are, because that one dude from the beginning of Guardians is in the same force as her. What is that? What are they called?
Yeah, their little Power Rangers team.
Their villain force team that are all Kree.
Skrull Roundup.
Yeah, so I thought... These are all these Kree, aren't they? If they're certainly if they're associating with Ronin, they must be bad guys. And well, sure enough, they are.
They
were. When they finally got to that twist, it's like, oh, got it, great, that makes sense now.
It looked like it was hard to act under all that Skrull makeup.
What? Which guys were the good? Ended up being the good guys. Skrull? Is that what it?
Skrull were the good guys. Yeah, Star Trek aliens.
Right. I think that they did a bad job at finally revealing that they were good guys. Emphasizing that they were like, they're super manipulative, and if you're, you know, start getting confused, that's exactly what they do. So and he's like, yeah, man, we're good guys. And I was just like, right, but this is going to turn, right? And then it didn't. And it was like, oh, now the assumption is that they're good guys, but I was never definitively, like, you
confident.
Know. Yeah, exactly.
I was confused for a good 5 to 10 minutes being like, why are they just acting like they're trustworthy?
Right.
Why are they doing this? And I was like, oh,
they're
really
good. Because he had a family, and now we trust him.
Yeah. Yeah. It also probably didn't help that everything on that ship where the No Doubt song played was so underlit and weirdly shot that I could not follow those fight scenes.
Yeah, all of the details in those plot points are a lot clearer the second time you watch it.
It makes sense.
So, to end, do you guys at all, Abby will probably be the one who has the most level-headed opinion, or Tyler too, level-headed opinion about this, but aside from whether or not we liked the movie Captain Marvel, if someone were to tell you, okay, so essentially the first real round of these movies is going to be 10 years long, 20 plus movies to get to what is going to become probably the highest grossing movie ever, if you know, like in the top three for sure.
Endgame.
Mm-hmm. Huge experience in pop culture movie making.
Yeah.
If you like these movies at all, it's going to be a huge deal. We're going to introduce the character who's going to have the most bearing on the story a movie before it. Would you be like, well, no, don't do that. I want to see the survivors. I want to see Captain America, that raccoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Black Widow somehow have to figure all this out. I want to resolve with the people that we began with.
Yeah, I feel like that was, and I do like the comic books, but there's a little too comic booky of like, oh man, the bad guy won. It's like, no, we have a stronger one. You just don't know her yet.
Yeah, she's here coming all the whole back. Time. Yeah.
Writers wrote themselves into a corner, and they're like, we probably should get a different character.
They
to
more
solve
so
this
wrote
problem.
Themselves into a corner of what they're gonna do after all these contracts are up, and they need another big central hero character.
Right.
So like, we should establish her now. In the movie that everyone's going to go pay to see so that her next movie will make more money. Because at the end of the day, it's really about making money off of these movies. Yeah.
I'm excited to see her in the ensemble. I think I would like, because I liked her character. I thought she was cool. And I think I would like it even more in an ensemble, like interacting with other people
totally.
And fighting with them and stuff. I still don't know what she's gonna do to.
She's gonna
solve
save
the
world,
solution.
Man. She's gonna like, take the
dead.
Glove right off.
I can punch right through
time.
A spaceship. What? Let me at him. They're like, oh, everyone's already dead. Oh well, then why the heck
so
did you
it
page
show
me?
Her, I can't remember. Did it show her in the scene with the Avengers? Or am I thinking of something different?
No,
the Stinger.
The Stinger did.
Yeah, it said, "Where's Fury?"
Yeah,
in the room with them.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. With it was Hulk, Captain America. Black Widow and War Machine.
Yeah. Don Cheadle.
Mm-hmm. Where's Rhodey? Rhodey.
I think Rocket was there with him. How come they don't have him in the room?
I don't know. Where's Thor? Thor's missing.
He just didn't pan down.
He was down there. You know, it's funny. We keep criticizing Captain Marvel for getting so strong so fast. But you know who got really strong really fast at the end of his last movie? Thor. That dude was jumping around in bolts of lightning and glowing, and he almost killed Thanos on his own. And we're like, oh, no, we're not complaining that he's too powerful.
Yeah, but that's a different journey, though. He's like a god that's been like flirting with these powers for centuries.
Yeah.
He's had 3+ movies of us already realizing that he has incredible potential. He's only begun to realize his true innate potential in part 3 of his entire franchise.
Where they finally
and it
break
took
the
him
hammer.
2.5 hours to get himself an axe built.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he is basically indestructible now too.
Yeah.
Where he's standing in the path of a star's laser beam.
Yeah. Right, but doesn't he ultimately fail in that movie? Like, even at his newfound power?
No,
like,
he fails because he didn't hit Thanos in the head.
Yeah, he said Thanos says you should have aimed for the head, and Thor's like, I can't. This is rated PG-13.
He said that.
This thing's hard to, like, steer.
So I feel like Thanos is really, all he needs is Thor and Captain Marvel, and he's done.
Yeah, but everybody's still
dead.
They
can go kill him. What's that going
to
do?
I know, and that's what I'm saying. Is all it was going to take to get Thanos at this point is just Thor and Captain Marvel. We don't need anybody else anymore.
No, I'm sure it's going to be some elaborate scheme to get the gauntlet
They're the true power couple time now, you stone. Know?
Shoot, man.
Put them
together. They're going to have a super baby.
It's going to involve time travel.
It's got to.
Maybe that's it. They get together, they have a baby, and that baby is just born.
This was my favorite. She shoots out. This is my favorite Stan Lee cameo in Captain Marvel. Reading the Mallrats script.
Oh, yeah.
That was really clever and funny way to incorporate it in the time.
Yeah, and her interaction with him was really good, too.
Yeah.
That was good.
And so the cards were all of his face.
That was nice.
The Marvel Studio card.
Are we going to see Stan Lee one more time?
They said they've got several of his cameos filmed.
Oh, really? Future movies. I feel like because it was so heavy-handed with Stan Lee stuff that this was like the last.
Kind of felt like that. But
yeah,
just because it's the first one since he died.
Yeah. They owe him a lot. Abby, in closing, do you feel as though, for the sake of girl power, Captain Marvel has to become your obligatory favorite Marvel character, or is there someone else? Or just because you like her, not as an obligation.
Are you excited to see her in Endgame?
I'm excited to see her in Endgame. I think that'll be cool.
Get her.
I've never thought about a favorite Marvel movie character, so I might have to take the Facebook quiz.
Hey, thanks for listening to You Hate Movies. I'm sure that very few of you listening to the podcast right now have any opinion about Captain Marvel and surrounding hullabaloo. But if you do, if you're the one in a million that actually had some thoughts about this small, mostly unnoticed movie, then go to youhatemovies.com, leave a comment on this episode, and let us know where we went wrong or where we went right.